Hi, this is Brandon Kroos. I co-wrote and directed this episode. Episode is season 1, episode 10, The Dance. And joining me for this commentary are...
Tiffin Weinstock, composer.
Becky Harrington.
You may not think it is a very great deal of big, but do not be made the fool.
Brad Smith, Jareth, and listening to Mr. Ham, who's freaking cool.
So this... this is when my computer died, actually. This is when I began the transition of going from writing this straight in Word to writing this like on the back of a script on a train or in Starbucks on my lunch breaks. Or I hadn't written anything longhand since like middle school. And so I started writing it longhand.
I've not slept in days! Sorry.
Bringing it home and typing it up in Word. I think on the old recording computer we had with like the pulsing screen that gave you like epileptic shock. Yeah, good times.
Yeah.
Oh no, you.
I'm just fanboying over this scene. This is. I had actually, to be perfectly honest, I had kind of forgotten about this scene, but it's so funny, and Andrew's delivery is just so fantastic. I have not slept in days. This is one of my personal favorite like funny moments.
Whatever happened to all the Mr. Ham paraphernalia that we planned to make and distribute?
Yeah, producers.
Well, there's actually a good reason behind that. It turns out that making crap costs money, and we don't have any!
Oh.
Yeah.
Lexi had this great idea about making these, like, squeaky toys or something.
Oh, yeah. She looked into, like, the molds for it.
Yeah, she actually looked into how to make the molds for these little toys, and it sounded wicked cool, but, like...
Yeah, we one thing I will say for this project, we've gained a lot of experience in researching things we can't afford.
So true.
Gotten a lot better at window shopping.
If somebody wants to throw a lot of money at us, dude, we will make you some crap. We are well versed in internet kitsch outlets at this point.
That's awesome endorsement. Did he sing yet?
It's impossible. Seriously,
I don't think so.
I think he sings at the
up.
End of this. The day of production, we didn't have lyrics, and my girlfriend was vacating the apartment before you all invaded it. And I asked her if she could come up with lyrics to a character she didn't know because she wasn't really listening to the show. And she took a few songs. This Mr. Plow from The Simpsons. The Meow Mix one. Yeah, she just came up with lyrics in like a half hour. And Andrew learned them, and off we went.
Yeah, did she forgive me for that after?
Do what?
Did she ever forgive you for that?
Forgive me for making her do that. Oh, can you blame her?
Did we ever get a cease and desist order from The Simpsons?
We actually, we've yet to get a cease and desist order from anybody. I'm kind of sad. I feel like that's another one of those milestones that we know will ever arrive. When people care enough to threaten to sue us over something.
The one where we have to go out and hire an attorney.
Oh.
That milestone, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a bummer we haven't hit that one.
Yeah. And money.
Wait, you charge how much an hour?
So since this is the first episode we had Tiffin, correct?
Yeah.
So maybe we should talk about how we got on the show.
Yeah, okay. So, okay, you tell me if I'm not remembering this right, but okay, so... We knew we desperately needed a composer for this episode because there was going to be The Dance, and The Dance would be kind of lame without music. You know, piping in some top 40 or something wasn't really an option. So we started hunting around for composers. Then we talked to a few people we looked up on MySpace and stuff like that, and
all of them wanted money.
there were some who didn't want money and sucked.
That's true. Right? Yeah. We had this whole interview with certain people. You know, remember?
Oh, I didn't know you guys interviewed anyone before me.
Oh, yeah. No.
We did.
You were actually part of a selection process.
Oh.
Yeah.
You mean I didn't just get this job by default?
No, you didn't. Congratulations.
Yeah, we actually did interview people.
There was competition and nepotism.
But anyway, Tiven is Brad's friend.
Yeah. So I met Tiven when we were in school in Santa Cruz, California. Banana Slugs Go, yes. Woo, and
Stevenson
all that.
Theater Guild.
Stevenson Theater Guild, even.
Yeah.
If there's like five other Stevenson Theater Guild people who
hi,
hear
Jason.
This, I'll be happy. there were a couple of other people associated with that crowd, like our friend Andrew Carl. IM'd me and told me that he had been listening to Second Shift while he exercised and fell off his treadmill when he heard you in the credits.
That's awesome.
But so I think I just was thinking like, okay, who are people I know who do music stuff? And I Googled you and found out that you were in Boston and sent you an email. And can you finish this story better than I can?
So you two weren't close friends.
We were in college. We ran in the same circles, but then we just lost touch when we moved across the country. I think I had known that Brad was living out here and had been meaning to contact him at some point. But Brad contacted me first and said, "Hey, I've got this podcast that I do." So I read his email. I started listening to the episodes. I quickly got pretty hooked on the show. And I was like, yeah, that sounds fun. I'll write music. And I came out and met Brad for dinner. And then I met Brandon and John, and we talked about music for the show. And I think I wrote a sort of example cue, which was totally not what you guys were looking for, because I didn't really understand what you wanted at the time. I was sort of into the magic idea, so I was trying to come up with something.
Well,
one
third of that kind of became part of the story,
part of it,
the dance later on, right?
Yeah, I think part of it I did use, and then a lot of it I cut because it just didn't work. But then I started writing the music for the show, and the rest is history, basically.
We had funny Jareth earlier that we were talking over. It delights me to no end to write funny Jareth. Because he's still uptight, but he's in a humorous way. He's not really that funny, but that in itself is funny.
I dance with all the grace of a mountain.
Yeah.
Freeze or whatever the hell that was. But yeah, that's the tough thing about these commentaries. People are saying, interesting behind the scenes thing, and in the background there's this little voice in my head saying, "But Jarrah's asking a girl out. Let's talk about that. Jarrah's asking a girl out. It's funny."
Yeah.
But yeah, this episode has all kinds of, "Hey, look, Jarrah's awkward. It's funny."
Yeah.
And it
was
funny.
there's a whole lot of awkwardness in this episode. I mean, just people asking each other to dances.
Yeah.
Does it ever not get awkward?
It's one of those classic, universally human themes that our writers, as the poets of human nature that they are, tap into on a regular basis.
That's awesome.
Are the characters on this actually human? Aside from the ones that came from Boston? Has that actually been established?
They're actually trolls, Tiven.
Oh.
Well, that's the disadvantage of working in an audio-only format. I mean, there's like constantly dragons soaring overhead.
We
can't narrate all of them.
We can't mention it all, yeah. Right.
Yeah, Jarrah's a stone giant.
That's why he's so sexy.
Is Fesmer a leprechaun by any chance?
Yeah. Well, his father was a leprechaun, his mother was a goblin.
Right.
Mike's sad that Jarrah's going out with Shauna. Poor, bitter Mike.
Oh, Mike's torture.
Sure,
Shauna.
I think it's entertaining that Mike, being on a show like this that continues for many episodes and being one of the main male characters, has to have a romantic relationship with every female character on the show.
Well, who wouldn't want to date Mike? Come on.
Everybody?
In fairness to Jarrah, while arguably less successful, Jarrah has either been the subject or object of a crush between all of the other female, all of the female members of the cast, with the exception of Zahna, I hope.
Well, we're not done with season two yet.
That's true. I don't want to spoil. I don't want to spoil anything.
It's amazing what you can do in a flashback.
Oh god.
Wow, and the comfort of realizing that, well, that's younger Zana is followed hot on the heels by, oh, but that's younger Jareth, too.
Oh, my. We are off track.
Well, you know, listeners are here to get behind-the-scenes information and trivia. I mean, they didn't know that Zana ran a daycare center before the scandal that forced her into the big pie business. That's canon now. Thanks, Brandon.
I want to make a goat
joke. Do we have any sort of listener discretion for this?
I think Andrea is going to go through and bleep anything that she doesn't like. And,
like everything you just said.
Other than that, though.
Well, I think we'll probably have something that says. Opinions are the significance of the creature.
This show should not be taken internally.
It's always fun to go through
that. You would attempt that, actually.
So, is this Zana telling Shauna to run, or was that last episode? That was last episode, right? Because then they got in the fight about it. And here she's kind of clarifying what she meant by her advice.
This is where Zana tells Shauna to run.
I just did that obnoxious commentary thing. What's happening? Oh, this is happening. Great. We found this very, at least on a writing level, very powerful for Zana, the trusted advisor. You know, they all look up to her and everything. Her advice is something really unsettling, actually.
Run away!
Yeah, when it comes from a trusted source, it really drives home how dire the situation is.
It's always fun to go through the forum feedback here, and I just realized, you know, if we ever are running out of things to say for the commentary, we can just read Steven Smat's comments and pretend they're our own.
Oh my god. I look forward to Steven Smat's post. He's almost always the first one.
Which is weird, because the guy's in Australia, isn't he? Don't our episodes come out at,
well, he gets it like 7 hours sooner.
Oh, that's how it works.
Don't our episodes come out like 3 in the morning for him or something?
7 hours before you even upload it, Brent.
He probably has his... I think he's probably got an alarm clock that's tied into the RSS feed.
RSS alarm clock? That like,
that's actually kind of cool.
His alarm just plays our theme song whenever we post episodes. I thought it was
because you found your... get some more Zana mythology here. I've never left. More to come. Still dedicated to truth. But I realize that I know my memory, Shay. That words may be truth, but... memories by their nature cannot be events that have not happened. I asked my question, and where most would spend their days in contemplation of that one answer. So it's interesting here, Zana's revealing that, that one answer, Ainoram are just like the collective questions. Remembering of a people. But yet they deliver prophecies. So how does that work exactly? Because they can't see into the future, yet they tell you what it's going to be.
Well, it's one of the way that religion is handled in Second Shift has always been an interesting thing for me, because it's really, the religion is more like ancestor worship than anything analogous to contemporary religion, but it's often...
for your advice.
Ainoram is still often talked about the same way that a contemporary religion would talk about God. You know, would talk about a deity as opposed to the memories of the ancestors and things.
What do you mean?
We've been gone for...
But they don't... Like, the ancestors don't, like, deliver, you know, mandates, thou shalt not. You know, they're just kind of, like, their resources. Once in your life, you get to consult them.
I get that, but we have heard people saying things like, this is what Ainoram would want or whatever. And I'm not... to be clear, I'm not saying this as a criticism of anything. I actually think it's kind of interesting that whatever fills that particular social... function gets used in that way.
Yes.
You know, they could they could worship Umbra and start interpreting her bleeding to, you know, someone would try to interpret her bleeding in a way that's advantageous.
I worship Umbra. There it is. I said it.
Well,
actually,
that Brandon is a goat worshiper really is probably not going to be the kind of news flash though.
You know, I was going to save this for later, but what the heck. When I delivered to you guys the final script, I was going to have the climactic
almost
version.
Apparently.
The doors bust in and there's Umbra. You know, the big fight. And oh my god, what's going to happen? And everything's in peril. And then, Umbra! And that was going to be the script I gave you without explanation. I was going to wait for you all to scream.
I think
at me.
Somebody suggested that on the forum.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm fond of delivering facetious versions of scripts too.
Yeah, we're used to it.
All that Archon does is accomplish with subtlety and finesse. Just that's fantastic.
You got me there.
I
would be happy to. Have you knowledge of the dancer's customs? Well, no, but I'm a gifted learner.
And so here we have. Would you say this is the beginning of the Mike Archon thing,
yeah,
or do you think it goes back further than this?
Hey, Esmer. Would you object if I joined you?
No, but if you came looking for...
Do they have a conversation before this where she's kind of like, I
not
admire
like
you? Or the Civil War.
Actually, yeah, you know, we actually mentioned that. We actually
yeah.
talked a little bit
they,
about
they
that.
They unite against the others, and that's where that begins.
Oh, yeah.
See? So
yeah,
the episode did
that
have purpose.
Have something wrong with each other.
Yeah.
Well, actually, that's right. Part of our brilliant analysis of Civil War was breaking down the cast into the high school cliques that they represent.
Right.
And Mike and Archon are the two goths sitting in the corner being emo. And Jareth and Catherine are like the student body, you know, the people running for a student body.
Need some time alone with Mr. Ham?
Oh, all better.
Shauna's the hall monitor.
Oh yeah? Why? Did Shauna make two of those costumes?
This is where Fesmer starts to...
No.
We discover his ultimately tragic addiction to alcohol.
Are you prepared for my fathomless wisdom?
You want me to go to the dance?
Ultimately tragic.
Yeah. Is that going to be his undoing at the end?
Well, also, Catherine was just asking Fesmer
sure.
if he was trying to get her to become a furry.
Good.
Wow,
like,
why didn't we just say
like,
that outright?
She's like, what, did you make two of those costumes?
Dude, Fesmer's a furry. That totally hadn't clicked before.
Oh my god.
That's fantastic.
I quit.
Hey, come on. There's nothing wrong with representing underrepresented niches. But yeah, you know, in a lot of ways, like, Fesmer kind of does give Mike a run for his money as the geek mouthpiece for the series. You know, obviously, Mike is going around talking about everything in terms of Dungeons and Dragons, but you know, Fesmer's got his X-Files, the truth is out there thing going on, and is like totally into the pig suit, and he's got the kind of geeky obsession thing going on. And he manages to do it often in a more charming way than Mike does, apparently.
Just for fashion.
Yeah. Yeah, something we wanted to do in season two was give Fesmer more of, you know, pay off his sort of conspiracy theory thing and see him kind of become his own person, for better or worse.
An intriguing notion, Shay. What have you determined?
Well,
so was it for better or for worse?
Well,
it's
for our listeners
space?
To decide.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And
okay,
for me, because
like,
I'm going to write it.
This isn't a choose your own adventure.
It should be. Man, if we had the resources, it absolutely would be.
And boom, the points are touching.
Oh,
actually, that would be a brilliant little theater experiment. Write a choose-your-own-adventure sort of script, and then perform it live, like at an Aresia show or something.
Like have them
and then just periodically have the audience choose. You know, if Mike should do X...
That's hilarious.
Yes.
Work stupid so this,
if we could pull that off, that would be freaking cool.
That'd be really
cool. That'd be really cool.
That would be amazing.
Where did it go?
It's the proto shift.
Behind you. That is amazing.
At some point, Shauna mentions I Heart Huckabees in here, and I remember
we
had a read-through or rehearsal or something, and someone said, didn't they do this
in
I Heart
Huckabees? Yeah.
Isn't this exactly the scene in I Heart Huckabees? So we kind of acknowledged that
in
here.
So you wrote it in,
but by doing so, we kind of set this at a certain time.
The surgeon Odin's begun, hasn't it?
Yes.
True.
We've been very careful up to this point, I think, to not set it.
Yeah, we had originally, like, in the very beginning of the show, we originally, like, Andrea had
it was going to be Harry Potter.
Four, three.
Someone comes up with something better, great. But until then, magically
we took that out and said the latest sci-fi movie to not put it into the time as much.
Of course.
Oopsie.
Well, to be fair, if you hadn't put...
Ooh, there's Tim's
there
music.
We go.
What an introduction. It's great. Just crashes in.
The first time I heard this, I don't remember who mastered this scene. I'm pretty sure it wasn't me.
I think I mastered the scene.
Oh, you did? Okay, yeah.
Either me or Andrew, I'm sure.
One way or another, I queued this up having no idea what I was going to hear, and my jaw just hit the floor. Like, our show's production value has just quadrupled.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tiffin, you are a huge godsend.
I had the same reaction when I heard his new theme for season 2.
Yeah.
It really, we were very tired at that point. Suffering fatigue of a kind. Then I remember the day you posted that.
Well, have fun, you two.
You look exceptional. Yeah, for this, I was trying to, I like to write a lot of sort of world music influenced music outside of film music that I do anyway. And so when this project came, it was like, wow, so I get to essentially create my own musical canon for this world. And I can do whatever I want. So one of my favorite influences, I would say, is Middle Eastern music, and I think you can hear a lot of that in the music of Second Shift. Outside of the sort of dramatic cues, the music of the world, like
it is very exciting. All of the advancements university crafters have.
This entire sequence. John Tanzer, my co-writer, wrote before I wrote anything else about the episode. He cut right to the end and wrote this because he had such a specific idea for how it should go. So I wrote towards this after the fact.
I think this was also one of the first scenes we did that just shift from conversation to conversation to conversation. This is the first time we tried what we now call panning the camera.
Totally true. We had the walk and talks.
I guess that's true. Yeah.
Although
there's three groups going on.
In episode 7 when they're walking to the Riga Stadium.
Okay. Sure, that's true.
But this is the first time it's kind of been like, one eventful thing.
Yeah.
Cutting around the place.
And I think this is the longest scene to date.
Yeah.
Probably, right. This is like a 13-minute scene.
Oh my god. Yeah, when we were recording the commentaries for 4, it was 26 minutes, and we were like, holy crap, that was so short!
Episode 4 is only 26 minutes long.
Yeah.
For season 1, yeah.
I was like, ah, that brings us back.
Yeah,
we the writers have learned many things about our craft. Brevity is not one of them. We have gotten longer and longer. I mean, there are two moments in season 2 where it was going to be one episode and we had to split it into two. The trial part 1 and 2, it was originally one episode. And then the three-parter, 10, 11, and 12. 10 and 11 was going to be one episode. And I got the script and it was like 50-something pages. I was like...
And even so, we have episodes that are 50 minutes. Like, what's the one we just did?
The shortest one is episode 5 of season 1, right?
Just got
like 17 minutes.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Wow.
But come now, everybody likes a party. That was also a really good episode.
It is a really good episode. What?
Let us get crunk.
So okay, Brandon, whose idea was inserting crunk into the Loundian lexicon?
Fairly sure that was John. Unless I put it in my rewrite. I don't remember, honestly.
When we get the applause here, I can't help but seeing the little stock footage, black and white, on Monty Python applause.
Left, right, turn. Right,
the Duke of Mora. This is one of the two most fleshed out. Well, this is one of the two most fleshed out bits of Londian culture, because we've got Andrea wrote the complete rules of Bricka. And she swears someday at a con or something she's going to run a Bricka game.
Well, we all do the Duke of Morin on the sidelines.
Oh, we all do the Duke of Morin on the sidelines.
I don't know if I'm going to get to do the commentary for episode 7, but in case I don't, I hate sports for the record. I don't get it. I'm missing the genetic whatever that allows me to understand and appreciate these things.
It's called athletic ability.
Yeah, there's that. And, you know, Andrea had this whole, like, three-page single-space document outlining the rules of Bricka, and episode 7 was all about, you know, football and Bricka. And, like, I struggled mightily with the episode, and I really think I triumphed. And John rewrote it, and all the parts where the mic's starting to explain something and the audience just erupts and cheers, that's John cutting out my mic explaining the rules of Bricka, because at that point I understood them. Which it was no small feat. He just, oh, episode's too long. It's boring. cut. That was a tense point in our relationship.
I really enjoyed recording this conversation.
Yeah, because this is us being flirty.
And it's also Jareth and Shauna very much in their elements, or at least Jareth in his element, you know, being all heady and stuff.
Yeah.
Let's talk about stuff.
This is stuff.
What?
Let's talk about stuff. Hey, I like talking about stuff too.
Shut up! This is intellectual.
This is kind of intellectual stuff that.
It's all prelude to a kiss. Are you guys gonna recreate that or what?
But
this is the
we
first
can recreate
time really
it exactly as we did in the
Shauna
studio.
Talking about philosophy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, exactly. Shauna doesn't usually talk about this, which I love because I studied philosophy and so did Brad. So for both of us, this is like fun.
Yeah.
And together on some basic level. And you know, we had never brought out like, "Hey, Shauna likes philosophy," and I was like,
"Yeah."
The writers are paying attention to my real life and putting it into my character.
Oh, we did a lot of that.
Yeah, I know. You definitely have.
I can't remember if it was Lexi that always used to say "guh," or if she started saying it after I wrote it a few times. But.
Well, no, I remember you congratulating her when you were directing because you had written "guh" and she actually said "guh." Like, she's the only one who doesn't ignore you when you write stuff like that.
Becky almost always changes like the little things. Like, what is it? I keep trying to get you to say "crud" or something like that.
Crud.
You never say it ever. I keep putting it in, but Lexi verbatim will read it.
That's true. She always does. I just make things up.
This beverage here is a certain path to laughter and smiles. Yes,
this is crud. Do you say crud in your real life?
Ah, crud.
I don't think I've ever said that.
Well, now I'm going to have to because you won't.
Just write it really big in really bold font
crud.
So I'm forced to say it.
Choog. That was another great. That was another one of the ones we wanted to have t-shirts that had Choog with an umlaut on it.
And we still could.
I still think that's fantastic.
Choog your smile juice.
Oh, I wish Sean was here for this. This right here, this anecdote, this is something that John saw his freshman year. They were fresh out of orientation or something. There was some guy just striding down the street with these huge, long strides, talking on his cell phone, and he goes, "Well, isn't that interesting?" And it became this running joke with them for years and years, and John found a place for it in his writing.
Like all great art, informed by life.
This episode is great for character development. Just getting, hearing things from them that we've had no other opportunity for them to discuss.
I figure if Shauna doesn't get her spell working soon, we'd probably have to be here.
Well, you know, you were commenting earlier about how you regretted having whatever the pop culture reference you were talking about, as you said, dated the episode. We were talking about I Heart Huckabees.
Yeah.
I'm actually kind of glad you did that because based on what's coming up, if you hadn't done that. People might be thinking that this was taking place in like 1993 or something.
Okay.
Because of the electric slide. So really, if we're gonna have pop culture,
you really synced up with that, Brad. That was impressive.
Thank you. It's all part of the craft, you see.
So yeah, why did you choose Electric Slide? I mean, you had the Macarena to choose from.
Blame John.
Achy Breaky Dance.
I never learned
the
electric
running
slap
man.
And leather.
You don't know the Electric Slide?
I remember it. I never learned it. I think our direction to you, Tiven, was
Jareth's opening
one song that is actually sort of three distinct parts, right?
Yeah.
It was kind of corresponding to the mood of each kind of.
Yeah, this was the end of the dance, slow number that you wanted.
Yeah, but it was like it was your first composition for us, and we're like, okay, we want one song. But it's really three.
And it's going to be like 15 minutes long. Yeah. I was like, oh man, what am I getting myself
trial
into?
Trial by fire, baby. But it was masterfully done. Really going
to miss it here. Speaking of masterfully done things.
What on earth are you about to say?
Jareth's getting his back on here. He's not bad at it. He opens up. He's emotional. He's kind. Chicks dig that stuff.
Can we talk about the kissing now?
I can't believe I just said that.
Oh, yeah. That's actually happening now. Okay, so the whole kissing thing. Brenda was directing.
Well, no. This is the kiss just happened. The like hardcore, you know, make out scene.
We haven't.
The episode hasn't gotten steamy.
Well, that's what happens during this little musical interlude right here, right?
True. We come back in and we're a little bit.
Yeah.
But anyway.
They have their clothes back on later.
So I was directing the episode and we were recording this in my the magic room in my basement that I discovered.
Oh, we should talk about the magic room.
We were going to record episode 7 at, I think, your house, Becky, or maybe Lexi's grandmother's house or something. We were going to haul out to, you know, nowhere, Massachusetts, and record in someone's living room. And I was rooting around in my basement for something, and I discovered a room.
This is an apartment.
Yeah, in my apartment in Jamaica Plain, Massachusetts. And I opened the door. Behold, there's like padded walls, there's microphones, you know, it's like all the things we need for the
requirement in your
basement. Yes, that's exactly what we called it. We called it the room of requirement.
That's incredible. It's a magic recording studio.
It didn't end there. Whenever we were missing cords, I could just look around the rest of the basement magically, there would be the cord we needed.
Yeah,
you know,
we were
mic stands, lights one time when we were recording like a documentary thing. Anyway, so we're in this room and it was hot and kind of smelly, kind of mildewy.
It was so hot.
And
there
Brad and Becky are standing side by side facing the wall on their microphones going and Andrew's manning the recording computer and I'm sitting there quote unquote directing. And whenever we made eye contact, we just burst out laughing.
So we had to keep doing it over and over.
We had to take that scene so many damn times because the director couldn't stop laughing at
because
our
the director was 12 years old. To this day, I still laugh when I think of that. You guys get so angry at me. Threatened to kick me out of the room.
I think
you
did.
I'm the director. Nah, I stayed.
Director, you can't kick me out?
I behaved.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how long did it take you to write all this? This is a lot of music. How long did it take you to do all this?
All right, ladies. I don't remember. Well, ladies.
Guess we'll see y'all in the morning, right?
Yeah, probably a couple weeks working mostly like between the hours of midnight and 4 a.m.
Well, it turned out fantastically.
Yeah.
It really just made the episode.
With their back is on us.
I suppose someone should.
Oh, rebuffed. Beginning of the end for Shauna and Jared.
Actually, it's in the next episode that I feel really guilty.
Yeah, that's the Mercy killing.
So sad.
Who's gonna take advantage of Fesmer?
Where's the goat cart when you need one?
You know, there was a scene at the end of this where Jared catches up with Catherine that I had originally written that John cut for length. And it kind of pushed it in the direction of maybe there might be a relationship here after all. And then we ended up not going that direction because the scene never made the final cut.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
It was kind of like a, you know, tender, consoling moment. Maybe more making out. I don't know. Maybe you guys wouldn't let me record it because I've proven myself incapable of directing that kind of thing.
That's kind of okay because I love Catherine's line later on about that ship has sailed and sunk. There were no survivors.
Is that last episode?
I don't remember.
Oh, Drunk Fesmer. Yeah, we recorded this with Andrew sober, and then later he had a few upstairs, and he came back down, and he did it crunkish.
Wait, Andrew's actually drunk for this?
No, we did two takes, and the better one was the one where he was actually sober. Because when he was actually, I wouldn't say he was drunk, he pretended to, he was kind of like stumbling down the stairs, I was a little worried. He gets to the mic, I'm like, Andrew, are you going to be able to do this? Like, can you even see words right now? He's like, I'm going to be fine. The cue comes, and it's like, he's perfectly articulate, and like, not drunk at all. Like, he's drunk acting sober.
Does that imply that Andrew has been like smashed for all the other episodes that he's recording where Fesmer isn't drunk?
One never knew with Andrew Schwartz. Remember when he disappeared for weeks at a time, off to other countries? Binge. Terrific benders.
Yeah, that was one of the more difficult parts of our season one production schedules. We get emails from Andrew saying, I'll be in Brazil for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Bye.
Yeah.
He was very valuable and very good and a spontaneous globetrotter. Who knew?
Well, he was spreading the word.
We've got a huge Brazilian following now.
I can't ever leave. I just want you to know I'm very grateful to have a friend like you here. Thank you, Shay.
So, raising the stakes before the knife hits the back.
I knew it. There's nothing to
Wow, that's... I actually hadn't appreciated at the time what a beautiful setup that is.
She doesn't even know this random rhyme I'm singing to her either.
Wow. Is that the only episode we've ended on laughter?
Don't expect that in season two.
If we were a TV show, we'd freeze frame.
I don't think any other episode has ended on a happy note.
Well, we just finished 2.8, which ended with massive explosions. And Mike asking if anyone left is alive in the entire cast, which we still have not answered.
Yes, our growing cynicism and bitterness is showing through.
That was the difficulty of writing the remainder of season two with everyone dead.
Had to introduce this whole new cast.
It's Mike solo.
Yeah, well, it's Mike imagining that everyone's still with him.
Oh, wow.
It's like
and then he wakes up insane elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great idea.
Well, thank you for listening to episode 10.
Yes, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
Bearing through this with us. Apart from small bloopers. Bloopers. Which is what I was staring at, if you were wondering. I have... Oh, do you hear my hysterical barking laughter in the background there? Any episode I directed, there it is.
Yeah, okay. Because remember, kids, sexism is funny.
What?
The more you know.